This week, we welcome Alessia Klevchuk, Principal Product Marketing Manager at Barracuda, to discuss the latest social engineering tactics and the growing complexity of attacks. In the Leadership and Communications section, what the newly signed U.S. cyber incident law means for security, how to plan for increased security risk resulting from the Great Resignation, the five pillars of growth, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Weekly.
Account takeovers, malicious campaigns, impersonation, and data breaches are on the rise, driven by the pandemic and security challenges of a remote workforce. The number one most common attack vector in breaches is compromised credentials. Constella Intelligence protects your key employees from digital risk by continuously monitoring the deep, dark, and surface web for exposed credentials, detecting threats that others miss with real-time alerts to protect you and your company from a targeted attack. Try it free at securityweekly.com/Constella. Endpoint security is designed to protect every device in your fleet, wherever it may be. These days, that can be a lot of different places. Find out how HP Wolf Security uses emerging strategies like application isolation, along with a zero-trust approach and framework, to give you a powerful, manageable, usable solution to your growing and increasingly spread-out security challenges. Learn how HP Wolf Security can make a difference across your endpoints at securityweekly.com/HP Wolf. Cyber risk and compliance automation is finally here. Legacy GRC systems cannot support the powerful, real-time automation and oversight that organizations require to take risks that matter to succeed. CyberSync continuous control automation ingests data from the IT GRC stack to update controls against regulatory requirements and risks in real time, delivering insights and visibility. See how members of the Fortune 500 are saving millions annually by visiting securityweekly.com/CyberSync.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 255, recorded March 21st, 2022. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in Colorado for two more shows. That's it, two more shows in Colorado, and then it's off to Texas. Joining remotely are my co-hosts for this afternoon. First, Mr. Jason Albuquerque. Welcome, Jason.
Hey there, Matt. Great to be here. Lots of action in the NFL, like we were talking about earlier, and March Madness. I have my son working with me on some brackets. So, so paying attention to March Madness.
Definitely some madness going on. The Texas Tech won yesterday because my son's at Texas Tech, so we were watching the game. And they pulled it out against Notre Dame late. But, yeah, it's been some interesting games already this last
Very
weekend.
Interesting.
Yeah. And filling in again for Mr. Ben Carr. Ben's got a new job. So when you get a new job as a CISO, you get a little busy. So he's missed the last couple of weeks. Stepping in again for him is Mr. Tyler Robinson. Welcome, Tyler.
Thanks for having me again. It's big shoes to fill, but you know, I'll fill him when he needs.
Good. Join us April 14th to learn how to monitor your Wi-Fi networks for attacks with Enzyme, a free and open source wireless intrusion detection system with Leonard Koopman, hosted by Larry Pesce and Paul Asadorian. Then join Alan Stiloskis and host Tyler Robinson and Paul Asadorian on April 21st to learn how to gain visibility into your enterprise with Sysmon. Live attendees at both of these webcasts will have the chance to win a $100 Hacker Warehouse gift card. Register at securityweekly.com/webcasts. And don't forget to check out our entire library of on-demand webcasts by visiting securityweekly.com/on-demand. This segment is sponsored by Barracuda. To learn more, please visit securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Alessia Klevchuk is Principal Product Marketing Manager for Email Security at Barracuda Networks. In her role, she focuses on defining how organizations can protect themselves against advanced email threats, spear phishing, and account takeover. Prior to Barracuda, Alessia worked in email security, brand protection, and IT research. Alessia, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So it's a pleasure to have you. So you did some research around spear phishing and email attacks. And we're going to talk a little bit today about the results and some best practices based on the research. But before we get into the results, I always like to understand kind of the hypothesis for the research and the approach that you took to launch the research. Because having a research division here at Cyber Risk Alliance that reports into me, I see a lot of our research. I help craft our research. So I'm always curious how other people approach their research studies. So I'd love to understand the background behind the research.
Sure. So what we tried to do here is we were very interested in looking at highly targeted email attacks. So what we've seen in the security space over the past few years is that the landscape has really changed, and this kind of spam and malware attacks have been around for a very long time, and they're still around today. But we wanted to focus on this new wave of social engineering attacks, and we wanted to understand how do hackers use social engineering tactics to bypass some of the security mechanisms that we already have put in place to protect ourselves and our organizations against a more traditional type of attack, such as malware and spam. So that's why we're doing this type of research. The way we're doing this is by looking at the attacks that have actually bypassed the email gateways and some of the filters that designed to block more traditional type of threats. And we're using the data that we have seen from protecting thousands and thousands of our customers and looking at the different targeted social engineering attacks, spear phishing attacks, business email compromise that are getting through and might be landing in the users' inboxes, the volume of them, the severity of them, and the tactics that hackers are using.
So you're using data from your existing customers to analyze different attack vectors. Did you augment it then with customer data, or is this pure based on what Barracuda saw coming through your data?
Yeah, this is all based on what we are seeing among our customer base. So we have tens of thousands of customers, millions of mailboxes, and that we are monitoring every single day. And this is all based on the attacks that we are seeing, different types of threats that we are seeing targeting organizations around the world, in North America, in Europe, in Asia Pacific, different types of industries. Also all sizes organizations as well. So this is pretty well good representation of what the threat landscape looks like today when it comes to social engineering attacks.
Got it. So what are some of the big findings out of the research? Now, I went through the research report. I have a couple areas I want to dig into, but from your perspective, what were some of the interesting findings out of the data that you were able to analyze?
Yeah, so there were a couple of things that we found. The first one I think that is most interesting is the account takeover and how prevalent account compromise is among organizations. We have found that 1 in 5 organizations would have had at least one account compromised in the past 12 months. And a lot of these organizations probably had more than one account compromised. So if you think about it, that's a lot of kind of real estate for hackers to go and start spreading internally, using those legitimate accounts to target employees within the organization or target organizations' partners and customers. This is a very kind of difficult attack to detect, and we are seeing an increase in number of compromised accounts that are out there.
So compromised accounts, first thing I think of is multi-factor authentication, right? We'll talk about best practices later, but does that mean we're not deploying multi-factor authentication? Because so even if I had a compromised credential and I use multi-factor authentication, I potentially would render that taken over account useless. So if there is a compromise and they're using those credentials, does that mean we're still not where we need to be with multi-factor authentication?
Yeah, well, multi-factor authentication is incredibly important. And it's, you know, if your organization is not using multi-factor authentication today, then what are you waiting for? You know, you have to implement it today. It really will take care of majority of the problems. But we are not in that place today. Most organizations still don't have multi-factor authentication because they have an increased kind of risk of having an account compromised. And at the same time, even if you do have multi-factor authentication in place, it's not always a silver bullet. Hackers know how it works and they are able to bypass it. You know, sometimes they are logging in into your account if they have stolen your login credentials, and you get this ping on your phone that is asking you to authenticate the login, and you'll be surprised how many users will actually approve that, and the hackers inside. In addition to that, hackers are getting really clever with how they are able to get inside those accounts. So some of the attacks that we're seeing was incredibly sophisticated in the way they're trying to bypass this multi-factor authentication. In one case, attackers are sending in a phishing attack that is, for example, will ask you to log in into your Office 365 account to check the status of email or your mailbox is full or there's some kind of security alert. You go in, you log in, you're seeing a landing page that is actually a Microsoft landing page, and you're logging in into your account. But what you don't see is that there is a token inserted into the URL. And what you're actually doing is not logging into your account, but you're logging, providing your account credentials, and then approving access for hackers to your account. So you're basically giving an permission to hackers' app to log in into your account. So even if you change your password, even if you authenticate your login with a two-factor authentication, hackers don't need your actual login credentials. They have access bypassing all of those security measures.
Yeah. So luckily we have a resident hacker.
That concerns me coupled with, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say we have a resident hacker, but I'll let you go first. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that concerns me because another one of the findings that you have is that C-level executives are the main targets of these account takeovers, right? And when you talk about folks who have the keys to the castle in your organization, I'm looking at the hit list here. CEO, CFO, HR was in there, and then accounting and finance. I mean, that's some you know, high-level executives with a lot of information, a lot of intellectual property, and a lot of keys to the castle that are extremely concerning.
Yeah, and they definitely are the number one targets among hackers for exactly that reason. They have a lot of data, and they also have a lot of authority, right, within the organization. So if the hacker is using their account to move laterally within the organization, they can do that. They can send a request to CFO for a wire transfer. They can send a request to an IT department to give them access to some important information, to some databases that they can then have a direct access to and really wreak havoc within the organization. So everybody is vulnerable, but C-level accounts are the ones that hackers are the most interested in, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no size organization is safe, right? I'm really interested in one of the findings that you had about small businesses versus large organizations when it comes to that it's volume attack versus per mailbox attack. I was astounded at the percentage increase of small businesses when you look at it from that per mailbox attack, right? I think the number was 350% more likely if you're a small business, a business mm-hmm. with less than 100 employees, of that type of an attack. That was an eye opener right there, let me tell you.
Yeah, and it is a surprising finding on one hand, but because you expect hackers and attackers to be more interested in the large organizations because they have more resources, they have more money there, they're more likely to have a larger payout. But at the same time, they probably are also a harder target for hackers as well. Smaller organizations, they do have fewer security resources. A lot of them don't even have a dedicated security department. They don't invest as much in various technologies that will help them prevent potential attacks or even recover and overcome breaches if they were to occur. So hackers are, they know that. So they know that this could be an easy target, and you can target 5, 10, 15 smaller organizations and have a smaller payout, but it's much easier to penetrate and trick users within those organizations than there would be within the large enterprises.
Yeah. And we're all part of the supply chain, right? No matter how large or small our organization is, we're part of that overall supply chain. So it's important to focus on that, you know. And you know, you quoted a cyber ventures statistic about 60% of small businesses will close their doors within six months of a breach. We've talked about it on the show. There's so many unfortunate events where you know organizations will bring us in to assist, and they're having to make the hard decision of whether or not they shutter the doors because of an incident that occurred. So it's real, you know, and no size organization is immune to it.
For sure. And, you know, for small organizations, losing the data. So if you think about the ransomware attack and being victim of one, for a small organization, losing the data a lot of the time equals losing the business. Larger organizations are more likely to recover from the loss of the data than the smaller organizations would. So small organizations in some ways are more likely to pay out, even if the ransom is that they're going to pay out is smaller, there is a higher chances of them doing that. And not having ransomware insurance, for example, is another kind of problem there, right?
So Jason, I pulled out the exact same stat, right? The SMB. Yeah. And I assume it's just limited budgets and resources to respond. But to your point, it's also a vehicle through third-party relationships to get into bigger organizations. And I think that's the other potential concern I took out of this is SMBs are targets to get to larger organizations because they might have a relationship with a larger organization and use their credentials to get into a larger enterprise. And it's lower hanging fruit potentially for them to go after the SMBs.
Yeah, no, 100% agreed. Again, it's you know, trying to find the weakest link. And in many, many instances, that small to medium business, that's part of the supply chain of a larger organization, is the weakest link.
I'm curious, how do you go about protecting organizations? Because breaking into organizations all the time, like, that's one of the hard things about what we do is offering something that actually represents a meaningful change with inside these organizations. A lot of places have good MFA, and like you said, we either trick users into signing into our MFA and proxying those credentials through, or getting them to click accept. You know, both of those are technological controls that are in place, but we're still able to get past that. So they say user awareness training. Most of my sites look good. They've got good certs. The names probably match. In fact, I may even use a Microsoft site to do it. So we can't really train them to do that. You know, they've got good DMARC. We've got incident response. So what is the kind of the answer to help these SMBs get past some of this?
Well, there's a number of things that they can do. The first thing is, you know, the reason why they're still being targeted is because if you think about an email, you know, anybody can send an email to anyone from anywhere. It's kind of the easiest way to get inside the organization. You don't need to hack anything to send an email. You can create a Gmail account and you can send an email. And if you get a response, that's your lead. And the way organizations need to look at it, regardless of their size, is to make sure that they have a robust email security in place and all of the measures. It's not that you're a small organization, you're less likely to be a target of an attack. You're not. In fact, you are more likely to be a target of a small, if you're a smaller organization. So the way organizations can look at it is to kind of think about it in kind of in the buckets. The first one is to make sure that you have all of the technology in place to prevent all types of email threats that are out there. You know, you have your spam and malware, which probably make up around 90% of the attacks. And then the rest is difficult. And you need to make sure that you have technology in place that is not relying on kind of traditional filters and signatures and looking at bad IPs, because that's no longer sufficient for modern day attacks. So you want to prevent as much as you can before it gets into inside your organization, for the mails that delivered inside the organization. The second one, you want to focus on kind of detection and response. And as you mentioned, security awareness is part of it, right? So you want to make sure that you use as a part of your kind of detection and response practice in some way. So they're able to identify attacks or suspicious messages, and they're able to forward them to your IT department. And your IT department has all the necessary tools in place to be able to evaluate that and respond as quickly as possible. Because the quicker you can respond to potential threats that did get through, the less risk of it spreading throughout the organization. And then finally, you know, you need to have in place some kind of a response and an ability to protect your data as well. So what happens if the breach did happen? Do you have a plan for that? Do you know what happens to your data? Is it secure enough? Can you recover quickly? Can you continue working if the breach happened? Do you have everybody in your organization? Do they all understand what they need to do in the case of a security breach?
Yeah, you jumped ahead to where I was going to go because because there was one other finding in the research that I thought was interesting that ties into some of the recommendations around protections. And that was this trend around conversation hijacking. Talk about that finding, because I think it's really interesting. Are they using that as one of the ways to bypass multi-factor authentication? Like, what are the different kind of conversation hijacking trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, conversation hijacking is a very interesting attack, and it's the one that is we find in the very small numbers. And the reason we find them in the small numbers is because they're incredibly complex in the way that they're put together, but they're also incredibly effective. So they do require quite a bit of homework from an attacker, and it combines multiple different tactics or multiple different ways that hackers are kind of putting this attack together. The way it works is that an attacker will take over an account and then sit within that account and look at business conversation that takes place. So who's talking to whom, what kind of business dealings are happening. So think about an organization and a vendor having a conversation going back and forth and about various invoices being paid out and goods being or services being delivered. So the hackers has access to this conversation. They take this conversation and they try to take it outside of the organization. So what they do, they'll a vendor is Barracuda Network. So they'll go and they'll register an account and domain with Barracuda with three R's, for example. It's really difficult to detect that. It's a new domain. They send an email from that domain saying, hey, you owe us some money for the services we have provided. Here is an invoice with the new account details. Please pay up. This is a really clever way of trying to get the money out of the victims, because they have a history of communication. They know that the money are owed. Sometimes they know how much money they're owed. They know all the parties involved. And because this conversation is taken outside of the organization that they are trying to scam, it's actually becomes really difficult sometimes to detect this attack. And we're seeing we actually seen a huge increase in the number of conversation hijacking over the past year. And the reason why we're seeing this, I think, is because they are so successful. They're difficult to put together, but the payouts can be pretty substantial.
Mm. So is this a way to get around business email? Is this a form of business email compromise? Because you're hijacking the conversation and then using that as a way to potentially then perpetrate an email compromise and get money out on the other side?
Yeah, and it is in some ways. And that's what I was kind of saying earlier. They combining different tactics. So yeah, it is a business email compromise in the sense that they're trying to get the money out of the organization, but it's also kind of a domain impersonation attack or an employee impersonation attack, account takeover attack, because All of those things are combined to create a single attack. And we're seeing more and more attackers using various techniques to get the money out. But, you know, their goal is always money. That's what they want at the end of the day. They're always looking to get money out of the victims.
And the solution, I think, is a combination of technologies, people, and process, right? Because, you know, I've had the experience where we've had people raise their hand before an issue takes place, and they realize something's happening, right? They realize that, hey, wait a minute, I have an invoice that I just got, but something just doesn't look right, right? And they're raising their hand. Or technologies, but I think it's a combination of all of it. If you have the right processes in place for approvals, right? We've had a CFO who designed approval processes for payout or wire transfers or things of that nature, where you have to go through an approval process, and that's where they're sniffing out bad behavior. So, I think it's all of the above: technologies, the people, and then have good stopgap processes in place.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where on best practices, I was looking at the policy section. To your point, Jason, exactly, right? I need to have procedures in place that create checks and balances, because technology by itself is not going to solve this. If there's ways to take the conversation off network, none of my controls are in place, or other aspects of the attack, procedure has to be kind of that last check and balance. Otherwise, you don't mitigate these attacks.
Right. Yeah. And again, if you have that right process in play, it gives you the ability to have, you know, someone say, wait a minute, this is not how this customer typically interacts with us. They'll never ask for a wire transfer. Why? You know, why are we doing it this way? They have ACH, or they have something else built with us already. And it just allows you to sniff out odd behavior.
Yep, exactly. Alessia, any other lessons learned for recommendations for listeners out there?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of adding to that policy discussion, it is very important, and it has to be part of, you know, you almost like you use education training. So you educate your users, but you also need to put in place policies around wire transfers. How do you request them? Somebody requests to change kind of the payroll details, which account to deposit their salaries in, and it shouldn't be done over email. Or if it is, there has to be some kind of check as a follow up to that request. You know, if you're executive within the organization or a manager within the organization asks you to buy some gift cards, you shouldn't just run out and go buy them. You know, there has to be some policies in place whenever the monies are involved, that they are double checked. Pick up a phone, call them, walk over to the office, ask them if that's exactly what they wanted to happen. And overall, the security education is really important. Like, we talked a lot about these attacks that we don't see a lot of, like conversation hijacking, account takeover. They're kind of a lot of the time they're not very visible to individuals, but you need to make sure that your users are aware of this type of threats, not just don't click on links, which is very important to educate users not to click on links that they are unsure about. But in addition to that, you know, what happens if you did click on the link, or, you know, what kind of requests should you be wary about? So educating them about the recent type of attacks and the newer type of threats is very important. And, you know, in addition to that, there's so many other technologies out there to protect against this kind of threats. And a lot of us have invested in email gateways to filter attacks that are coming in and out, but a lot of the time that might not be enough anymore because the attacks have evolved. So should your security. So try to figure out a more dedicated type of technologies, ones they're using, for example, machine learning, as a way to prevent attacks getting inside the user's inboxes.
Yes, agreed. I've seen enough of those a gift card attacks for my CEO. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Alessia, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly.
Thank you for having me here.
If you want to learn more about Barracuda or how to protect yourself from spear phishing attacks, please visit securityweekly.com/Barracuda. We'll take a quick break and then cover the leadership and communications articles for this week.
Cybercriminals are working overtime. Last year in the fourth quarter alone, phishing attacks disguised as COVID testing information increased by 521%. Barracuda has identified 13 types of email threats and how cybercriminals use them to steal money from your company or personal information from your employees and customers. Find out about the 13 email threat types and how Barracuda can provide complete email protection for your teams, your customers, and your reputation. Get your free ebook at securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Monitoring and maintaining compliance is a never-ending struggle with a high price of failure. FireMon helps customers meet complex and varying compliance requirements. FireMon has fully customizable reporting, analytics, assessments, and dashboards to meet the compliance needs of any organization. With FireMon, compliance reports take a tenth of the time, and real-time continuous compliance eliminates the anxiety and headaches of audit preparation. Improve security outcomes by improving security operations with FireMon. Visit securityweekly.com/FireMon to learn more. It's time to rethink how we approach cybersecurity because the reality is modern cyber attackers are already past your initial defenses. ExtraHop helps your security team find and eradicate advanced threats before real damage is done. Protect your enterprise and customers with better defense. Learn more about how ExtraHop stops advanced threats at securityweekly.com/ExtraHop. That's extra H-O-P.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Jason Albuquerque, Tyler Robinson, and maybe a guest appearance from my cat, Milo. Don't miss any of your favorite Security Weekly content. Visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to any of our podcast feed and have all episodes downloaded right to your phone. You can also join our mailing list, Discord server, and follow us on social media and our streaming platforms. Do you have a specific guest or topic that you want us to cover on one of the shows? Submit your suggestions for guests by visiting securityweekly.com/guests and completing the form. We review those monthly and we'll reach out once reviewed and approved. Don't send me an email because I'll just point you to the form. Okay. Articles for this week, gentlemen. I started with this first article about the metaverse. And I pulled this out. It was really targeted for the CIOs, but I'm like, well, if the CIOs have to know about the metaverse, then the CISOs have to know about the metaverse. I'm curious, Jason, like, is this a topic that's coming up in your organization? Like, what's our metaverse strategy? Like, what do we have to do?
It's so funny that you say this. It absolutely is. And we actually did a live event for customers around Microsoft Mesh and the integration to Teams for their metaverse platform, and bringing mixed reality to the table and really having those conversations on use cases and how it could be used. And I'll tell you right now, some of the things spinning with you know, CIO strategies and business leaders is how do they use that as that next media to engage with their customers? You talk about having, you know, physical presence with a store, you talk about having online presence through e-commerce, and now it's like, how do you engage through this type of metaverse with customers, and how do you drive that to become, you know, a revenue generating opportunity? Do you have a virtual storefront where you can actually start doing business with customers, right? And it's 100% part of conversations right now, no doubt about it.
So, are you getting ready to issue your own NFTs?
Quite possibly, right? I mean, if you think about it, there's so much technology that gets integrated into this architecture, into this strategy. You're talking about NFT, you're talking about augmented reality, right? You're talking about 3D reconstruction or digital twinning, right? A lot of folks are bringing digital twinning into the mix. And you're talking about IoT. That's all connected into this, you know, potential new way to do business with customers.
Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
No, it is one of the points in which, if you are a business, you have to be considering this, because it's just like the web. If you didn't get on board on the web, like, you missed some prime time to get good domain names, good web presence, have your brand recognized with inside that space. Same thing for today. Like, there's a lot of places that have to get some of this, not just set up, but really understood from a security standpoint and what the company can do with inside the space, because you will have technologies that you'll have to be able to interact with, you know, whether it's just being able to take a blockchain currency for payment, or having some sort of web presence where your product is listed. Otherwise, you're going to have a competitor or someone selling a fake you, which you don't want as well. So there's security implications to not understanding how this is done and not getting in early so that you can begin to set up and prepare what you have to do within the space.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I mean, the reasons why we want to be looking at this now as security professionals and risk management professionals is there are going to be legal issues. There are going to be privacy issues. There are going to be scams and things of that nature. You know, what's the next version of a business email compromise in the metaverse, right? What's the next version of that scam, that phishing scam, something of that nature? Like, what are the threats we're going to have to deal with? What are the risks of moving toward this type of a platform? We're going to have to think about all that.
Yeah. It's all the things we went through in what, the late 80s, early 90s, into the early 2000s as we were navigating the web. Now here we are in this expanded version of all this. Are there any lessons to learn other than don't wait because it's coming? Like, for all the cloud naysayers out there, like, it's here, like, get on the train or you're going to miss it. I mean, are we at the same point with this whole concept of the metaverse?
Well, I think, you know, let's not have knee-jerk reactions here. Let's build it correctly. Let's sit back and know how, number one, how are you going to use this and who are you going to engage? How are you going to engage them and what technologies are you leveraging to snap into this experience? And then, hey, by the way, it's all about the data. What data are you collecting, right? Yeah. What information are you going to be storing? How do you protect all that? So know your assets. Know your assets when it comes to data, systems, services, who you're engaging, and then know the risk behind all that.
I just heard app user data. I that's all. Yep. I heard. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yep. And then identity, right? And then identity. Know who.
Right.
Who you're working with.
Yep. That's the user side. Yep. That's what I said. App user data. The three security controls that transcend even into the metaverse, folks.
Even into the metaverse. Forward thinking.
Yes.
Yeah. There really is no way around it. There is a Web3, there is blockchain, there are all these altcoins, there is a metaverse, and it is, you know, pretty far along. We're already into this, you know, 10 plus years for Bitcoin and a lot of these technologies that are being actively developed with very large budgets behind them. So we're past the point of this, you know, is just a fad. It's just going to pass through. Like, there's massive, massive amounts of money and infrastructure behind a lot of these, as well as banks and smart contracts backing most of these altcoins. So the financial industry is wholly on board with these altcoins and different cryptocurrencies that are backing many of their back-end databases. So we're past that point. So you really do have to kind of adapt and move forward and get an understanding of what's important to your company and how you actually adopt and or understand the security implications of what those things do.
Agreed. Yes. Ties in a little bit to the second article. Equifax's CISO lays out his big 10 security risks. There's a couple that are interesting in here because it talks about limited coverage. We talk a lot about cybersecurity and the challenges around cyber insurance. So that one is in his 10 list. He talks about the trust, blind trust and losing trust. He also talks a little bit about quantum, which we really haven't talked about much on this show. I don't know how big of a risk quantum security is or how you guys see quantum security ultimately playing into the security risks, but those were some of the highlights out of his top 10 list.
Yeah, I mean, I would say from the quantum perspective, it's, you know, what he listed as the risk is data is being stolen and collected in droves, he says, right? For that day when they can use quantum to decrypt it all, right? So it's preparation for the long ball, I guess is what he's saying in his, you know, in his risk list here, which I get, you know. I mean, just collect droves of data, and then once you have the technology available, use it.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few ways to evaluate quantum. One, you have the cryptology side of this where you have to evaluate, you know, what's the risk proposing and or mitigating the cryptography we're using for our product or service. Two, how much data is being leaked and what do we have to do about, you know, when that data can be gone through and leveraged and utilized from a consumer standpoint or a privacy standpoint. And then three, from all of the data being collected at, say, the wire, layer two and three, we really do have to start caring about the politics and the legislation that is either protecting that or the technology from supply chain that is backing those things for long-term our long-term ability to maintain that privacy and integrity.
Or in his case, the lack of legislation being one of those risks, because he specifically spells that out as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, we are lacking in that, but on the other side, you know, he calls out the director's dilemma, right? Corporate boards are under scrutiny. There's more and more litigation and higher level of risk for these boards of directors. So, you know, I think that puts them on notice.
Yeah. Talking about notice, the new omnibus bill signed into law has a little couple notification triggers in the back end that are a little interesting. If you are identified in one of the 16 critical infrastructure sectors, you have to notify CISA within 72 hours if you experience a cyber attack and within 24 hours of making a ransomware payment. How many people knew that was in the bill?
I know, right? And that's, you know, that's the beauty of these large bills in DC, is that they can sneak a bunch of different pieces of legislation into a larger bill. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I think folks who are in that critical infrastructure, be forewarned. And some aspects you don't even think of, right? So water and wastewater systems are in one of those 16 agencies. Municipalities have their own water districts. Yep. So guess what, public sector? Guess what, municipalities? You got to start thinking about that, right? You have municipal energy companies that are run by the municipality, the city. So be forewarned, you know, you're falling into this new legislation.
You have municipalities that produce their own power that fall into the energy sector of the 16 critical infrastructure sectors, right? So there's some interesting downstream of impacts for this, I think, at some point. And this was an article that was actually written by, I believe, some of our folks on the SC side as well, that, you know, this was kind of hidden in a bill, like, mm-hmm. You better know that it's here, because now there's these requirements around it. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Yep. How to plan for increased security risk resulting from the Great Resignation. This is more around preparing for employees and their departures and offboarding. We covered some offboarding tips a week or two ago. This is kind of a culmination of a couple of those articles all brought together around what happens when employees leave, what are the steps you need to take to protect the organization, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think it goes into, you know, how can you maybe shore yourself up from that risk too, right? So, you know, there's a section in here that talks about, you know, nurture the culture of your organization, how to stop, maybe mitigate some of that, you know, resignation that's happening. I mean, it's real. You know, I'm seeing it all the time with customers and, you know, colleagues about, you know, they're shifting jobs, right? And in a lot of instances, they're saying, you know what, I'd rather take work-life balance seriously these days, and I'm going to go to another job that allows me to have a little bit better work-life balance. So it's real. And now we need to make sure that we're offboarding our staff appropriately. But I think the bigger strategy is, how do we retain that staff and stop it from happening in the first place?
Yeah, agreed. And it talks about a lot of different there's technology discussions in here too. It says, you know, adopt a zero trust framework. Okay, so I'm presenting on our zero trust research next week in the e-summit. Only 35% of the industry really fully understands what a zero trust architecture really, really is. So it's easy, say easy, do hard, right, Jason?
This is one of those things, right?
Zero trust is not well understood yet, but everybody says, oh, just implement a zero trust architecture, you'll be fine. It's not that easy.
No, it's a journey. It's a long-term journey, and in many instances, it's doing some of those core functions that we're supposed to be doing anyway and getting those right first.
Right. I'm going to cover part of this.
Long-term journey with a large budget, right? Like there's a large amount of CapEx expenditure and resource-based expenditure and time, continual time to get that done, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, if we're not doing the basics right, we can say we have zero trust, but we're still going to fail because we're not doing the basics right.
Right. Yeah. Back to security hygiene. That was last week's segment, right? I mean, come
100%,
on.
100%. Yep. Absolutely.
Exactly right. This next one, how to be a good boss. I love Vanessa Van Edwards. We had her on a couple of years ago. I should try to get her back on the show. But every once in a while, she produces an article that I'm just like, we got to cover it on the show because it is really about how to improve your communication and leadership skills, right? It's a great resource out there. And this one is about how to be a better boss. And there's some steps here that are just like things we could start to implement today as bosses to help our staff be better. So I thought this was a great initial list. It's probably not the whole thing. We've talked different leadership articles and different techniques over the years, Jason. But yep. I thought this was a good place to start.
No, it is. I don't know. I hate the word boss. I just hate that word. You know, I wish this said how to be a better leader. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I just don't feel boss is the right terminology. But at the end of the day, how do you become a better leader? I think this is a pretty good list. You know, one of the things I think is super important is, you know, in the list is knowledge transfer, right? Make sure that you have that level of knowledge transfer within your organization. So that way, you know, you're not falling down when there's a change in staff.
Right. This also ties into my last article, which is the 5 pillars of growth. Again, this is a leadership article, right? So this talks mm-hmm. about, you know, some of the ways to be a better leader in a mm-hmm. leadership role. This list is really interesting to me because I think goal setting to me is one of these, we can go into a whole goal setting conversation later, but one of the big ones here, this first one's time management. Like I think this is the biggest challenge for leaders, right?
It is time management
between what you need to do strategic, what you need to do tactically, what you need to do with your teams. How do you manage that time without like just killing yourself, right? I think this is a big challenge for leaders.
And it's forcing strategic time onto your calendar, right? Because one of the things I find can be very easy to fall victim of is getting caught up in the daily whirlwind. We're all running 1,000 miles an hour, we're all doing a ton, but if you don't focus on your strategic time to be able to move the needle on a lot of those strategic initiatives that you have in your business plans, you're going to get caught in the whirlwind. You're going to get caught in the day-to-day, and you're going to be stuck in the run. You're going to be stuck in keeping the lights on. So you have to force that innovation time. You have to protect that strategic time on your calendar. Otherwise, you just get stuck in a rut, and you'll be in the run all day long. You'll be keeping the lights on.
Yeah, I know what it's like because some days that's what you get stuck in, Jason. That's what I mean is that's the hardest part is there's so many things that have to get done in the day-to-day running of a business that you forget mm-hmm. to set that time aside and work on the next evolution of your products or your portfolio or, you know, the next initiative that you're going to go do. That is really, really a struggle.
And it's a core function, I think, that makes all the rest of those items successful, right? Because you can set all the goals in the world, but if you're not actioning them because you're not putting the time toward it, you fail, right? Yeah. If you're not putting time into prioritizing your tasks, you fail. If you're not taking time for yourself, right, in the stress management portion of this, to exercise, to read, to do something that's going to allow you to decompress, you fail. If you're not taking the time to have that level of introspection and self-awareness and really be able to take a step back and look at how you're performing and be candid with yourself, you fail. So that's time management sets all these other items up for success.
That's like the goal setting, right? Like the goals without a plan is really just dreaming. So you really do kind of have to step away from those to-do lists, which is hard for many of us that are very task-oriented, very strategic as well as visionary. But you really do have to block out and get the calendar times put into there and come up with the actual boots on the ground time management of blocking out strategic things for each initiative. So you're not just working on an ever-evolving, ever-continuing list of things that need to get done.
Yeah, right. Those tactical items will always be there, right? And if you just focus on the tactical items, you're never going to be able to grow your organization or grow your team or grow your strategy. You're in the day-to-day, all day, every day. And that's not how you can take your organization or yourself or your career to the next level.
Yeah, so when we talk about goals, because it's so related to the task prioritization piece, right? Tasks are things you do to meet the goals. But if the goals don't have a plan, they're not measurable, they're not achievable, then they're not goals. They're tasks, right? And so you have to understand that difference, because we get wrapped around the axle sometimes on our daily tasks, our task list. Yep. But are those tasks that you're doing on a day-to-day basis meeting your specific goals that you're trying to achieve across the business, and understanding that relationship and how to manage those is a balance? Because if you don't spend the time to build out plans to go meet those goals, they're not going to get done, because you're going to get tied up in all the daily tasks and you're going to forget about them.
You'll never move the needle, right? You'll never move the needle on bringing your business forward. Because I mean, the best strategies are those goals cascades, like you just talked about, right? What are the overall corporate goals that your executive leadership are building for the entirety of the organization? And then as a business unit leader, how are you aligning to those goals at the highest level? Because everything we should be doing as departments within an organization should be driving toward the success of those upper level corporate goals. Mm-hmm. Everything.
As long as they get set.
That's right.
By the executive team, right?
That's right. 100%.
Otherwise, your goals are you're never going to have alignment. No. And why even do it?
Yeah, right. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the key, right? So, you know, sitting with the CEO and saying, all right, what are we looking to achieve? Sitting with the CFO, what are we looking to achieve over the course of the next year? That can give you some basic ideas on upper level goals. If there's nothing formalized in your organization, right, and they're not, you know, communicating an overall corporate strategy, then start doing some legwork yourself and start interviewing all the different business unit leaders. What are you doing this year to be successful? What are your top level goals? You know, talk to the CEO, talk to the CFO, start aligning to those.
Yeah. And being one of those business unit leaders, I know what some of those are, right? It's revenue, it's margin, it's new product development, it's, you know, growth in certain areas, it's scalability of your platforms. Like, these are things that the exec teams want. Then how do you align your goals to meet those, right? What are you going to do to help grow audience, for example? Or how are we going to make improvements to a product? What data do we need? What analytics do we need to improve those, right? I mean, those, now you can start to build specific goals around those higher level goals, which are usually revenue and cost and margin based at a high level with other strategic activities. Now you can align. How much content do I need to produce to hit a revenue target? Like, that's a goal, right? Because you can align it to revenue.
That's right. And you know, just because we're in cybersecurity doesn't mean we don't align to the growth plans of the organization, right? I mean, we can be a business enabler. We are a business enabler. So, you know,
we
start aligning
be.
To those upper levels. Yeah, absolutely. 100% agreed.
Because if we're not, we won't be sitting at the big boys table having these conversations.
Yep. That's right.
Exactly right. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Mr. Robinson, thank you for filling in for Mr. Carr again. Thank you for everyone for watching and listening. We'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.